You beat those stamp Nazis with good old-fashioned American complaining.
Homer, if it weren't for you, we'd be at the mercy of weekend philatelists.
You know, why didn't you just say stamp collectors?
Because I'm tired of dumbing myself down for you.
Live from the closed freeway on the way to PSE, this is the award-winning stamp show here today. If you could dream it, we could collect it. Brought to you by the Southern Nevada Philatelic Research Center, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation for the advancement of philately. You can support this witless tosh by joining the Stamp Show Here Today community. The cost is only $10 for a lifetime membership. We are an APS-affiliated club. Listen to the end credits for information on joining. This is Cash.
This is stuck in traffic because of Biden's arrival, Mark.
This is Jim.
Who wasn't stuck in traffic.
And I had no choice, David.
Yeah, Mark, did you see what caused the freeway there to close? Or
yes, the president is visiting the state in order to gin up votes for his upcoming election.
Oh, you are joking.
No, that's actually what happened is Biden is arriving in Las Vegas.
Ooh. And so they close the freeway.
What they do is they close the tunnel underneath the runway so that you can't run under there with M-80s and
blow him up as he lands.
Wow.
Yeah.
Every time the president comes in, that's the way it is.
I guess this is the first time I was caught in that.
Probably.
So anyway, this crossed mine and Mark's desk because it actually crossed when we were eating lunch today. But Mark, why don't you go ahead and share that?
Well, there's an article from Smart News. Written by a perfectly adorable millennial named Julia Binswanger, and she's talking about the 1 cent Z-Gro going up for auction just in a few weeks here. And
it's in June.
In
spring. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically she's trying to cover, you know, not being a stamp collector herself, she's trying to cover what it all means to the collecting community, and she says things like. The Z-Gro, named after its zigzag pattern, is the most rare of grill shapes. So I can understand that this young lady was furiously trying to write notes as she was interviewing, I guess it was Scott Trepel at Siegel. She got a few things wrong. But it is an entertaining article, and she gets a lot of stuff right.
Zigzag pattern. That's why it's a Z-Gro. Right. Yeah.
She says owning any Z-Gro is no small feat, let alone a 1 cent Z-Gro. She says most of the Z-Gro stamps were 2 cent and 12 cent stamps. Some are 3 cent stamps, and very very few were for 1 cent, 10 cent, and 15 cent. So
I didn't know there was a 10 cent Z-Gro.
Yeah, interesting.
Learn something new here.
Yeah, well, it's
from a non-philatelic.
I need to pull out my Scott's catalog and do a fact check on that one, but I do not think there is a 10 cent Z-Gro.
Right. So the and she talks about the big stamp swap. You know, block of four, the plate block swap for the Z-Gro.
Yeah, inverted Jenny.
Yeah, the inverted Jenny plate block. So it's interesting now this stamp is coming to market again. And one of the things she claimed was, or I guess she's quoting a New York Times article Bill Gross had spent over $100 million on his pursuit of completing his U.S. collection, which I think, it must be all of the in collection, not just his U.S. collection, because...
Have to be.
Yeah, she talks about... Trepel estimated that he might get between 15 and 20 million for the stamps, for his U.S. collection. And that would make him a terrible investor indeed if he spent 100 million only to realize 15 to 20.
Well, so, they're probably talking about, he spent 100 million and included his house.
Right.
And he's keeping the stamps in, and his car that he drove to his house.
Gold-plated tongs.
Yeah.
Don't forget the giant magnifying glass that he inherited from Colonel Green.
Yeah, there you go.
When did he start collecting?
Oh, I forget when.
Yeah, he wasn't a lifelong collector, I don't believe.
No. He started way late, and the story is that he spent 2 years studying stamps before he purchased his first stamp, which sounds like a great story. I don't believe it.
Yeah. 2 weeks, maybe.
He read a book, and then 2 years later, he decided to.
Yeah.
So when he made the trade, the Jenny trade, the block of four,
mm-hmm.
for the Z Grill, was that parody at the time?
I think so. It seemed like it was a straight up swap.
I think by definition, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the transaction.
Yeah, well, I'm talking money. You know, obviously he was happy to get something he wouldn't be able to get otherwise. So
right.
to him, it was equal.
Well, yeah.
Regardless of whether, you know, the real value was money-wise was there.
Yeah, and these stamps, you know, it's just, I mean, when you get to that level, it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of, you know, pure speculation anyway. But it seemed like it was a good swap.
I came prepared to talk a little bit about this upcoming auction, which will have this stamp in it. The Gross collection is going on sale June.
Well, I think actually it's starting next week, and it's in several phases that are going to go all the way to June.
Yeah, and 1 cent's going to be in June.
Yeah.
But basically,
I don't think there's enough money in the stamp economy to absorb the entire thing at one time, yeah.
The Gross accomplished something that is very rare indeed, and that is he got every stamp in the U.S. in his collection. So I don't know if there's any variety that may exist that he doesn't have. We'll know when we see the catalog. But the major numbers,
yeah.
let's put it that way. He got, and he needed the 1 cent Z Grill to complete that. And I think he had spent 15 years accumulating this collection.
Well, Zollner did the collection too.
Right. It's quite an accomplishment.
And before Zollner,
obviously, it takes deep pockets to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm looking forward to getting the catalogs just so that I can see all the stamps of the U.S. in in some blown up photograph form.
Now, was he collecting just Primo stuff?
No. No, he always went for quality, but there are some stamps that you can't get in quality.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and like anything else, the best known could be a 50.
A dog.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at the 1 cent magenta.
Yeah.
You know, what does that grade? Maybe a 10? Yeah, probably
it's ungradable. It's ungradable in the condition I've seen it in.
Yeah, it's just
it's terrible,
terrible condition.
Yeah.
But it's the only one, so it's top pop.
Yep.
And as I recall, Gross exhibited the collection mounted on just plain old Scott Classic pages.
I don't blame him. Yeah.
With every space filled.
So, Jim, what crossed your desk?
Well, that was it. I came prepared to talk about that Z Grill and coming up auction, and you guys kind of preempted that.
We derailed you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I just think it's very exciting for the average collector to see that type of material, and you ought to get the catalogs from Siegel because you won't have the whole U.S. collection in better photographic condition than you'll probably get in that catalog. I mean, you can't see it in the Scott catalog.
Yep.
Are they going to be hardback editions or?
Yeah, they'll probably have both.
Yeah, it will be a collectible auction catalog where most catalog, but you know, like the famous Honolulu Advertiser sale. You know, that's right. like a very sought after auction catalog.
Because it's basically complete for the country.
Right. So, yeah. And the Zollner collection catalogs.
So, Mark, other than that, what crossed your desk? I see a Saudi Arabia stamps article in front of you.
There's an interesting article in Scott Monthly where it talks about an author talks about Saudi Arabia stamps that he was going to be expertizing, and it's a set of five stamps, I think. And he was relating a story about how he saw these stamps at Chicago Pex, and that the dealer that was selling them to a client, the client wanted to have them expertized. And then he was explaining why these stamps would require two certificates. And it piqued my interest because I'm trying to figure out, did he mean two certificates for each stamp or two certificates for five stamps as opposed to one certificate for five stamps? And so, I mean, you know, here at PSC, when you issue a certificate, it's for a single stamp. So so I thought it was curious, and I'm not an expert in Saudi Arabia. I don't collect worldwide. So, I mean, is it not unusual to have a certificate for a multitude of stamps?
Now, he was a certifier himself.
Right. He was an expertizer. Correct?
And he believed that, see, the way I took it before you explained to me that it might be the same guy who's saying it needs two, is that potentially he thought that one guy would be an expert at the overprint and another person would be an expert on the stamps.
Right.
That's how I interpreted it to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense because, I mean, you could say, well, you have one expert for the perforations and one expert for the cancel.
Well, he's a certifier. He's a certifier, so you make more money that way. Makes perfect sense.
Well, I do know a expert in Iranian stamps. Or Persian stamps, Persia and Iran. And he does issue certificates for complete sets. So if he would have said this requires five separate certificates for five separate stamps, makes sense. One certificate for five stamps, okay, he's doing a certificate for the set. But two certificates, one for three stamps and one for two stamps? I mean, it doesn't make any difference.
Sound like a poor businessman.
Right. Well,
and that's
and he actually does explain in the article, or at least he says in the article, I will explain why it requires two certificates. And it was difficult to understand, but I think what he's talking about is because two of the stamps were overprinted at a different time, or with for different reasons.
Ooh.
that it requires a certificate for one set versus the other.
So you have like an expert on this overprint,
right?
And then you send it to another expert on that overprint.
Well, but see, he's doing both. And that's why I was kind of confused. He's issuing
both
certificates.
That's normal. That's what you. Oh, he's doing both certificates.
Right. So he's saying to the dealer, yes, I can certify these stamps, but they require two certificates.
So what he's basically saying is, I can do these, but I want to charge you twice.
Right. Well, he ended up not charging the dealer for the certificates, but he said they did require two.
He left out of the deal, though, is when he actually starts certifying them and he finds out that, you know, there's five stamps in the set, and each one of them's good, another one's not, this one's potentially not, then he's going to have more than two certificates.
Well, that's the problem with, like, the fellow that I was speaking about. When he does a certificate for a set, what happens when the set isn't genuine?
Right.
And
or some of them.
Yeah, some of them are, some of them aren't. And I believe what he does then is he bounces the certificate.
Can I make an insert here? In the article, he explains that the stamps, all five of the stamps, are from Saudi Arabia, but the three basic stamps and their overprints are from the Kingdom of Hijaz.
Ooh, okay.
So
yeah.
I'm taking this to mean you need to have the Saudi Arabia stamps authenticated and then the overprints authenticated by somebody who's expert in that overprint from Hijaz.
Well, we do the same thing here. You know, stamps issued during FBDR need a totally different expertizer than stamps from Grover Cleveland. So you have your Grover Cleveland expert, and then you have your FDR expert, right?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no,
right.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It makes no sense.
No, yeah. But it would make sense. For example, we get an overprinted United States stamp, like the Shanghai overprints or something like that.
Or better, take Hawaii.
The Hawaii.
Hawaii stamps.
Hawaii stamps.
So Hawaii was not part of the United States. And then it was.
At what date?
So
what date was it?
1900.
No, 1898.
Yeah, 1898.
But when did they start addressing it as Hawaii, though?
Oh, well, Hawaii is a Polynesian word, which was used, and I believe it means mainland or main island, one or the other. But Hawaii was one of the islands. It's not the entire chain. So when did they start doing it? I don't know. They called it the Hawaiian Rifles in 1898 when they took it over the place.
It was Hawaii. The kingdom was Hawaii. And that goes back to Kamehameha, which is 17-something.
Well, yeah.
When he unified all the islands.
Yeah, unified in finger quotes there.
Okay,
yeah.
This is for millennials. 3 days ago, I was on eBay, and this is why, you know, always look on eBay for things or hip stamp or whatever. But I found a cover, two covers for $70. And one had a 35 on it. And it
10-cent Washington
10-cent 35
mm-hmm.
from 1861. And it had a 10-cent U.S. 68 address to Montreal, Canada East. Okay, they wanted $70. Eh, not going to make any money as a dealer on that, okay? But the interesting thing is on the 35... It said Lahaina Sandwich Islands.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the name that was used in Europe from when they found it. They named it for the Earl of Sandwich. And you see letters addressed to Sandwich Islands into the 1870s, even from the United States.
Well, I even noticed
But the locals never called it that.
Okay. Because I even noticed
that's the English
is that there's a place, I think, where this cover originated. Was also there's a place called Sandwich. It was either Vermont or Massachusetts or something like
probably
that. So I was thinking, did the Sandwich Islands, did that name come from there?
No, it was, I think, James Cook.
Well, also, the word Hawaii, there are actually a lot of places on a lot of islands that are called Hawaii. It's just that they changed their name after Hawaii became Hawaii. You know, they'd say, over there in Hawaii. And they go, oh, you mean up there, Honolulu? No, that island right there, that's Hawaii.
We kind of got away from where we were going with this.
Yeah, good
point. So I just want to get back to that. Either way, it would take an expert on Shanghai overprints or Hawaiian overprints.
But it wouldn't. it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if you're looking at, is the stamp authentic, then you have to look at, is the cancel authentic, is this thing? And that's different. There's areas, different expertise. Most of us, where you learn it together. In other words, when we had the Kansas-Nebraska overprints in here, Mark was sitting there and saying, well, this is the wrong color of the stamp. So he knows the stamp is the wrong issue for the overprint. And then somebody else, we get looking and we say, okay, well, that's a fake overprint on this one, even though it's the right stamp. Correct? So
I don't understand.
In other words, it takes...
If the overprint was real?
If you submit to PSE a Hawaiian stamp, we're going to just expertise it.
Well, take Hawaii out of it for a minute, and let's talk about U.S. stamps overprinted with these different things.
Okay, so
hold
on, take the Molly Pitcher stamp. So we need an expert who is good at 2-cent regular issues, and then a person who's an expert on Molly Pitcher.
No, you don't need that. What I'm saying is that is what he is saying about these stamps, that it takes an expert to expertise the Saudi Arabian postage due stamp, but it also takes an expert to expertise the Kingdom of Hazaj.
But he's the...
Yeah, but it's the same guy,
but he's
though.
Doing the same thing.
Yeah, so it's the same guy.
It could be that, yeah.
But he's using a different part of his brain in each one.
Right.
He's trying to confuse the issue.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that you could
issue one certificate saying, on a genuine Saudi stamp, this is a genuine overprint, you know.
But we had that with when we were discussing these Kansas-Nebraska overprints, because we had to educate ourselves on... the color of the stamp, the gum breakers, and whether the overprint was fake or not.
I don't think that's a comparable comparable comparison.
All right. Well, I was just trying to explain where Hazard was coming from. I don't know.
God, I feel sorry for the people who have to listen to this.
It's that witless tosh that you talk about.
So, Dave, you have anything interesting?
I was, when you were talking about the, what was it, the first thing you were talking about?
The one cent.
The millennial and a Z grill. Mm-hmm. I think as older adults, we tend to forget that lady probably has a particular audience, and they're probably all basically millennials. So what she was saying was 99% fine. To someone who is knowledgeable about that stuff.
Yeah, well, I think she did her best for sure.
And probably most philatelists would not know where Z Grill came from, the name Z Grill. So coming from a zigzag thing.
Yeah, it's definitely not a zigzag, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you connected the dots in a zigzag fashion, you could sort of make a zigzag out of it.
Yeah. Well, there's no easy way to explain it because they start with the basic grill A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, and then there's a Z.
Right.
Is that because we want to go from A to Z on the grills and we just had to do that or something, whatever? But, you know, there's no explanation for an A grill.
Right.
I mean, we know what it is, but there's no reason to call it the A grill over something else.
The A grill was the first grill.
Yeah,
and
I did
it
that.
Failed totally, busted apart the stamps, was not good for stamps, was not good for the post office. And so they said, we got to change this. We cannot grill the perforations. And so from that point on, it wasn't a question of how big the grill is. It was the whole thing was how big is the space between the grills. That's what they were doing. They were working on the space between the grills, not the grills themselves.
Yeah, so that they ended up, when you get to the H and I grills, they're really hard to see because they're so far apart, and then they've also fixed the plates in such a way that they grind them down. And
they were into such mass production and they don't know this for sure, but it makes sense based on what we see, is that when they were grilling the stamps, they were grilling multiple stamps at the same time. You know, in the 1869 issue, they'd put one sheet in, grill it. This one, they said, screw it, put 10 of them in at the same time. And so, you know, the top four would get a grill, the bottom four would get a grill, and the two in the middle wouldn't have anything.
But they were doing different grills on the fly, or they had planned? Sounds like what you're saying, though, is that they figured out, okay, an A grill, this is not working, you know, because the stamps were busting apart at the purse and whatnot. I'm not sure if they were trying to protect collectors or they just didn't like the way when they tried to separate
protect
them at the
revenue.
Post office.
Yeah. They were falling apart.
So when it got to the B grill, that would have been on the fly rather than a planned thing. We need to change this. Now, on the B grill, there's four known, I think I was talking to Cash earlier. There's four known copies all in the same letter, or was there five?
They were all on the same letter. Okay. And I think now they've been all separated into five stamps.
Okay, because in the catalog it says 935,000 for a single copy. So I was thinking, okay, how'd that happen?
So what happened is it obviously was a transition grill. They said, okay, let's buzz off a little bit of this and so it doesn't cut the purse. Then they buzzed a little bit more off because that didn't work, and somehow a few of them got out. But the C grill... And then you get down to the D grill, which is actually...
Well, also the C grill, they said, hey, wonder if we put it upside down.
Yeah, they reversed it.
And so they ran those through, and they go, well, this doesn't work either.
So anyway, on the B grill, since there's only four known copies they found in the same letter, did they, before that letter was found, I don't know when it was found, was it in the 40s, 1950s, 1960s,
or what?
I don't
recall. It was mailed from Texas.
But they knew potentially before that was found that there could be copies of a B grill out there.
I doubt that because it's a transition grill.
So, but they weren't writing down every little information when they were experimenting and saying, well, we're going to try on this.
I'm sure they did someplace.
It might be. That's a good question to follow up on and look at. But as far as I know, because there's only four known, it's got to be a transitional thing. And it was mailed from Texas, which makes you wonder, how did it get to Texas to be mailed? You know, did the sheet just get mixed in with sheets that were sent out, and there was just one sheet that went out, and those were the only ones that survived?
So,
or did somebody carry it with them? We don't know.
When they were producing these grills, they were doing multiple sheets. Is that correct? On top of each other? And
No. That's during the banknote process.
Yeah, that was
the
banknote. Okay, during
the post-Civil War period, they were doing single sheets.
See, they had the same problem. They got the grill pretty well figured out when they got to the F grill. That was the standard size that most of we find. Then they come out with the 1869 issue, which was a smaller stamp. And so they had to come up with a different grill because the grill was too big for the stamp. And so you have the little G grill. And then when they go back to the banknotes, those are a bigger stamp. Actually, they're a little bit bigger than the 1869.
They are, too. Yeah.
So at that point, they come up with a different grill. And that's why you get the H, I, and J. And J is, that's really a rare animal, too. I mean, that's one of those experimental grills that somehow got out. But
so does your listenership all understand why they started applying grills?
Well, it depends on who's listening, because, you don't know. But that's why you listen to this podcast, is because we try to explain it.
And on that note, keep collecting.
We need your help. Nothing on the internet is free, including our phone and internet connections. So you can support the podcast by joining the Stamp Show Here Today Club. The cost is $10 for a lifetime membership. Please include your APS member number, as we are an APS-affiliated club. Your support is greatly appreciated. Our brand new spanking address is 5965 Harrison Drive, Suite 6 in Las Vegas, Nevada, 89120.
You left out the word glorious.
Fabulous.
Because you don't put that on the letter.
Oh. Well, you could.
You could, yeah.
You could, yeah.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Sideshow Mel, Corporal Punishment, Gina Ballerina, Owen from Knot's Landing, Miss Donna Mills. Oh, she was a sport. We've had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fun, but now the time has come to go. If this silkworm was found dead in his bed tomorrow, I'd be in heaven still doing this show. See you some other time!
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.